I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to episode 24 of Blue Jays Happy Hour, the last episode of the 2021 Blue Jays season, or at least the last day of the 2021 Blue Jays season. It was a heck of a day for baseball in a general sense, Stoughton. I'm Nick Ashford, by the way. I always forget the guests. I normally don't forget myself, but that's kind of that's where we're at. Yeah, a bit of a grim day for the Blue Jays. It was a wild one. What was your experience of today like? I mean, I guess like a lot of people, some hope and then some, you know, crushing reality.
Oh yeah, it felt real good for a while, and then it did not. But also, as I was saying to you off air, like, I don't know, I watched with some casual fans, and I had to explain to them like, no, the Washington Nationals are going to blow this game. They are a very bad team. And pinning your hopes on the Washington Nationals is very bad. It will only end in misery, and then it did. And I've never felt in my life so bad to be so correct.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to. I think for me, it was when I don't have a real rationale for this, but when it went to 5-2, for some reason 5-1 felt like, oh, they have to score 4 runs in 4 innings or whatever it was. Like, they're kind of running away with this a little bit. But when it went to 5-2, I'm like, oh, that's a couple base runners and an extra base hit. Like, that didn't feel safe. It wasn't safe. And then on the Rays side, you know what? They won the first two games against the Yankees. The Blue Jays just had the Yankees in town. They didn't win those games. I think the Rays kind of did their part for Toronto.
I think you're right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, if there's a team that didn't do their part, it was the Blue Jays over, you know, the 40 games that they could have won that didn't. They didn't win, right? Like, that was probably the difference between them being in the playoffs or not.
Yeah, the middle of the season, you might say, was a bit of an issue. It was kind of zooming out a little bit, because we all know what today was. Today was this disappointment, and it's kind of unfortunate because the Blue Jays game itself included, you know, some George Springer majesty, some Vladdy hitting, you know, one of those incredible opposite field home runs that we didn't really know he was capable of coming into the season. You know, Ryu looked unbroken for a little bit. It was the Orioles, but still, you know, yeah. Little Nate Pearce. Like, there's a lot to like about that game, but that game became irrelevant so quickly that we all ended up watching, you know, a Rays offense that's been incredible all year, unable to produce anything against the Yankees' old bullpen. And we watched a Nationals team that we all knew was bad. Be bad. There's not a lot to that. So I want to kind of take a deep breath and think about sort of the 2021 Toronto Blue Jays. What do you think you and the Blue Jays world at large is going to remember about this team, you know, 4 or 5 years, 10 years down the road? Because I do think it's fair to say, and I know there's been a lot of Blue Jays teams have missed the playoffs, and a lot of them do get kind of swept up and forgotten. I don't think this team is going to be forgotten. So what do you think you're going to remember about this team?
Yeah, you're right. I don't think that they are going to be forgotten. I hope that the Blue Jays, you know, fandom at large doesn't think like, oh, that was the team that Charlie Montoyo pissed away enough games that they didn't make the playoffs. But I know that a lot of people will probably think that. But also there were, you know, there were just so many things. It's I don't want to say it's nice that they missed so, by such a fine margin, but like it at least makes it so like you could pinpoint like literally like 90 things to say that like what this is why they didn't make the playoffs and not like pin it on one human being. But yeah, I think people will absolutely remember this team. That sounds weird. It feels like we're doing a eulogy for them, which we kind of are.
That's kind of what we're doing here. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, I mean, Marcus Semien is, a free agent. Robbie Ray is a free agent. Those were like, they would not have, this day would not have been what it was without those two guys. And the Blue Jays are still very well set up for the future. I think they've got a ton of young talent. They've got a ton of financial flexibility, and we'll see how that sort of plays out over the offseason, which I think is going to be an incredibly interesting offseason. But yeah, no, it's it was just a woulda shoulda kind of year, and it sucks that like it doesn't suck that they in September like made that run that put it all so close, but it just magnifies every little decision, every little thing. You know, Semien not getting that throw from second to first in Detroit, and or Tyler Chatwood playing several important innings where he was terrible, or you know, you can go down the list. Like there are a lot of things that you can point to that helped the Blue Jays not get to here. Or help the Blue Jays actually get to here and not get into the playoffs. And yeah, I don't know. I can't even process it yet because I still can't even process the fact that the Rays lost to the Yankees because that was such a tight game. And the Nationals, it was 5-1. Like, you know, it's wild. It sucks. But also they have no one to blame but themselves. Though I will say, the fact that they played in Dunedin and Buffalo probably didn't help them.
Yeah, and I remember I went on the radio early in the season, maybe April or something, and I was asked, you know, what do you think the effect of playing in Dunedin is going to be on the Blue Jays? And, you know, you can get micro with that, and you can say, oh, well, here are some hitters who will maybe hit better than they're based on the dimensions or whatever. But I wouldn't say I scoffed at the question, but I think I said something to the effect of, I don't see that having an enormous effect, but we see races be so close that, you know, something like that maybe is worth one or two games. The fact that the team doesn't really have a home, that their facilities are suboptimal, that they end up moving to Buffalo. You'll never know what the effect of that was. Like, you'll never be able to pin it down and say, oh, well, that cost them 7 runs on the pitching side, right, and it cost them 4 runs on the hitting side, and here's when those runs would have come. And as a result, they would have won 3 more games. But I don't think it's crazy to think that there was an effect, and that if they had been in Toronto the whole season, you know, a 1-game difference doesn't sound outlandish to me. So, yeah, if you want to put it at the feet of something, I think that you could say that under different circumstances, this team would have made the playoffs. I'm not sure that's what people are going to remember about the team, though. I'm not sure people will remember, because that happened in 2022. It's all going to be kind of part of like, oh, the COVID Blue Jays, that was a thing. I mean, it's funny how we think of things in the future affects or is changed by what happens subsequently. So this could be the Semien year because he doesn't come back. This could be the Ray year, but if Ray does come back, this is one of the Ray years.
This could still be the Ray year. Yeah.
You know, if Ray's kind of really here for the 1 year, then there's the, you know, the tight pants and the Cy Young potential and the folk legend thing. Like, that really makes this 2021 more singular than if he comes back. And maybe he isn't the same guy. Probably he isn't the same guy, but it changes things. You're right. It is the woulda, coulda, shoulda year. This is a bad comparison, I'll admit that. But people talk about the 94 Expos all the time. It's like, oh, that team was so good and they would have done it. And I don't think of the Blue Jays on that level in terms of like they would have won the World Series, because that's not how the playoffs work anyway. And they weren't at that level where they were like the best team in baseball. But it is going to be, there's a good chance, I think, that this is a year that fans look back on forlornly for years and years and years and years. And then, in fact, the myth of this team, and again, this is casting into the future, so I may be totally wrong here. They may return to the playoffs in 2022 and everything's awesome and this year kind of fades into the background. But there's a chance that this is kind of the year that people look back on deep in the future and they say, wow, they had a hell of a team. Like George Springer was in his prime. Vladdy had his best year. They had this year out of Ray. Semien hit 45 home runs, which is still insane to think about. I could see the myth of this team growing through the ages for Blue Jays fans. And that's a weird thing to say, you know, minutes after this season is over. And I may well be wrong. And in some ways, I hope to be wrong because if the franchise is to have success, then this is the sort of season that just kind of happens and fades into the background. But, you know, the history of this franchise is a lot more missing the playoffs than making the playoffs. And seasons like this do stand out in a context of not having that sustainable Dodgers-like success, which maybe they do then have in the future. But if they don't, this one's always going to stay.
No, I think you're right. And yeah, to especially because of the Ray and Semien situations being free agents, this is the thing like we talked about at the trade deadline and like throughout the year. It's like this might be their shot. And Vlad having an MVP-like year. Like Vlad, I think we would all agree, is going to be very good for a very long time. But he may not necessarily be an MVP candidate every single year. He's just going to be a great hitter. And it is, it's concerning for the future, but I think it also doesn't feel in the same way as like 2016, where it's like, you kind of knew the writing was on the wall, the end was near. We are, and maybe that makes it like a little bit easier to swallow, which is obviously, you know, not whatever anybody wants to think about right now, but like, it, you know, the future is bright for this team still, even if they don't get Ray and Semien back, even if they, you know, whoever they replace them with, or if they get them back and it doesn't go as well as you'd hope, the core is, you know, is still here. I think they have all sorts of opportunity ahead of them. But it's just, you know, that doesn't guarantee anything. That's a tough place to be in, even, you know, in the best of times. And then also watching the stupid Yankees and the stupid Red Sox go to the wild card game, hopefully to be beaten into a pulp by the stupid Tampa Bay Rays, who I also hate. That also sucks, right? Yeah. But I do at least feel that like you can, as disappointing as this was, it was also like, you know, at the start of September, if you'd have told us we would be here, and this is such a not great way to think about it, because we were here, they were there, they could have won one of those damn games in Minnesota, we could have won one of those games against the Yankees. It was so close, and that has sort of been the story of this team, is just like, you know, you look at the run differential, there are playoff teams with less run differential than them. There are playoff teams from, you know, the White Sox have a few, I don't know what their wins are, but like, it's absurd that the White Sox just got to beat up on a terrible division, as the AL Central apparently always is. Nothing will like take away, I think, the fact that people will look back at this team and think they were really good and should have done better. But at least you can kind of hang your hat on the fact that, that thing, like the window is just at the start of opening as opposed to closing.
Yeah, I feel like they're kind of two camps right now. There's the they're better days ahead camp, and there's the wow, what a wasted opportunity camp.
I think they're both. I think they're both right.
Yeah, absolutely. They're both. It's, you can believe both things. You can believe that this might be the best opportunity they have for a couple of years, and that also they're gonna be in the playoffs in the future. Like next year they could, for instance, have quote unquote less of a good team that doesn't even kind of perform as well in some ways, like take run differential. Like they could be the Boston Red Sox of next year. You know, they could be a team that kind of plays above its head and gets more wins than you'd think they'd get. And maybe they aren't as good as the 2021 Blue Jays, and that, but the results end up being better. Like that's well within the realm of possibility. So I don't think we need to reside in one of those two places. I think that it's all true. Like this,
I think it reminds, you know, this team reminds me, and I believe we talked to Wilner about like 1984, you know, the start of that rise, but also like, I don't know, you could talk to people who'd be like the 1987 Blue Jays were the best Blue Jays team that ever existed, even though they collapsed at the end. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right that there is, that they may have better results, but not have a better team, which is so weird to think and also disappointing because the results didn't bear out what the real talent of this team was, you know, as long as you don't pay attention to the bullpen, which obviously was a bit of an Achilles heel.
Yeah. I mean, even take the recent history, right? Like the 2015 Blue Jays were significantly better than the 2016 Blue Jays. I don't think anyone is going to debate that. Like if you want to say,
if they played each other, the 2015 Blue Jays would win.
Yeah. If you want to be like, oh, 2016, their rotation was better or something, like, I don't know. You could, but you're wrong.
Rotation was healthier.
But, yeah, yeah, you're wrong. The 2015 Blue Jays were better, but they got the same distance. And even in 2016, I think everyone knew that. They were like, this isn't the same quality team, but hell, we're in the playoffs. Who knows what could happen? And they came up against a Cleveland team that was injured, and they probably should have gotten past that team and probably would have gotten thumped by the Cubs, and you can play all those games. But what we've learned today, if we've learned anything, or maybe what we've had reinforced.
I tried personally to never learn anything, but okay, we can try.
What we've had reinforced is that baseball's not fair, much like life. Like, why would baseball be any different? You know,
it is cruel. Yeah.
In all of our lives, we've had things go our way way more than we deserved. And we've had things that were shitty and went the other way, and we didn't deserve that either. And I think almost everyone can point to something like that in their lives. And that happens in baseball, too. This team deserved better, but it's also they didn't get it. That's what happens. Like, it's a shame. And so, like, the flip side.
And they made their own luck in a lot of ways, I think, too. Like, let's not absolve them from from whatever they deserved or didn't deserve, I don't think.
No, they're, you know, we won't talk about the bullpen too much in this episode just because I don't think anyone needs to hear that. But we know, you know, some of the issues coming into the season in terms of how they built that and the things that went wrong and how that affected how they can lose this many games while having X run differential. Like, we all know.
Or George Springer not missing a ton of months, or, you know, you can dissect a ton of decisions, which I know people will do, you know, managerially. Oh, absolutely. And just, you can go down the list. It's, when you got this close, there are just so many things that could have changed the whole outcome of the season significantly, and sadly did not. Robbie Ray giving up four home runs.
Oh man, it was weird because that felt like, I don't know, that always felt like it was I had a premonition that was what was going to happen to Ray in a wild card game, that he was going to get left in too long and give up the home runs, because those are the two problems. He gets left in too long, he's bad third time through the order, and he gives up home runs. Those are his only two problems. And so they happened to come at the exact wrong time for the Blue Jays. Might have happened in the wild card game, too. If we established...
Talk about Robbie Ray, though, that is a weird... It's like, you know, he's just throwing... You know, the non-walk Robbie Ray of 2021 really thrown in the zone a lot. Like, I don't know how durable that success is. And I guess we're now into the goddamn off season. We can actually talk about it.
Well, also, like, if you throw two pitches, the idea that when a guy sees you for a third time in a game that he's going to be better is not crazy to think that, like, oh, I've seen both of these pitches, you know, five times each. I'm getting a sense for what this is like.
Picking it up out of your hand, yeah. Absolutely.
And we'll see where that goes. I mean, if we establish that, this is the Ray year, this is the Semien year, this is the coulda, shoulda, woulda year, what do you think are the things that are going to slide underneath that? People are going to forget about 2021, good or bad. Like, one that stands out to me, for instance, is I feel like no one is going to think about the year Teoscar Hernandez had. Like, the guy becomes an all-star, establishes that what happened in 2020 wasn't a small sample type of situation, and that he's, like, you know, someone worth investing in. We'll see what happens in the offseason with him. But, you know, because Vladdy was such a figure, because Springer, you know, for all the good and bad reasons, attracted so much attention, because Bichette is kind of part of the face of the franchise group, he was a guy that I just think when you think of the 2021 Blue Jays, he's not going to be a name or face that comes to mind necessarily, but just an enormous part of this team and a huge step forward, or at least proving it.
No, I think that, I mean, Teoscar, absolutely, that's true. Because, yeah, he was a guy who you had to, like, pick out the dates to, like, be like, oh, he was great for these 6 weeks over, like, you know, several seasons. And then he basically, you know, he didn't have the greatest end of the season. But, yeah, he had an incredible year and does deserve to be that guy who is sort of below that tier. You know, no one can be Vladdy. Springer is, had he played, we would all be universally praising Springer. But yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think that, this is a great question. I think that Danny Jansen's end of the season was very intriguing to me. I don't know if that's the right answer to this particular question.
Keeps coming back, keeps rearing. Every time you want to give up on Danny Jansen, he just keeps reminding you that he used to be good at hitting and maybe he could be again.
And it's like the downtime when he was injured, it's like, did he just figure out how to hit again? Like, I don't know.
He watched so much video while he was rehabbing.
But I would be happy to like Danny Jansen and be confident in Danny Jansen. I don't know that I am just at the moment. But it's been real good. That's been really nice. I think this, well, we talked about Corey Dickerson last episode, who I think has been very interesting also. Again, I don't know if I'm answering the question as to like what is going to get forgotten about this year that was actually like interesting. I think maybe the Alek Manoah story, though, beyond all those, is really the thing. Because we joked about it for weeks.
That was the podcast for a while. Yeah. If Manoah had not been cutting it up in AAA, we would have been really stumbling out of the gate. Because we didn't have a lot of other stuff going on.
And then he came up and he just fucking, he delivered. He was so good. He's been so good all year. He's sadly not going to get to pitch another game this year. At least, you know. But yeah, absolutely. Like somebody on Twitter the other day was just like, you called Manoah from the start. I was like, I was kind of half joking, man. Like, I thought that I kind of clocked that he was better than Tanner Roark, but that was not real difficult to do. Yeah. And it was just like, that was the only option that they had. And it became apparent that it's like, okay, this guy seems green. This guy seems like, you know, lots to like about him, but he's a guy who was pitching an A-ball like last year or whatever the hell happened in 2020. And that whole story, it's really remarkable. Like, you know, and I think that will, a story that will get probably less remembered because I think he's going to go out next year and do it again.
Yeah, and it's the sort of thing where if it were 2018, for instance, that would be the biggest story of the Blue Jays season.
For
like,
sure.
We have developed a good starter. We have a guy that, you know, we've brought up. He's a rookie. We're going to have him for a long time. He is currently good and projects to be good into the future. Like, not a Gustavo Chacin, to pull a name out of thin air. But, yeah, like, not a guy who kind of came up and had good ERA or whatever. But, like, you know, you can look at the way his pitches move. You can look at what he's got. Like, this is a guy. And there's a lot of seasons in Blue Jays history, and again, you know, that kind of speaks to some of the, you know, lack of success this franchise has had at times, but there's a lot of seasons in Blue Jays history where that would be the best thing that happened to the Blue Jays, was Alek Manoah came up and was really good. Like, yeah, I mean, a lot of those between the World Series and 2015 type of years, like, you know, a lot of the early...
There were several years between those two.
Yeah, multiple decades, you might say. and during those decades, there were plenty of years where it would have been really great to have a story like Alek Manoah. And I think you're right, because if Manoah continues to be good, the fact he was good as a rookie becomes less and less relevant. So it's just like, yeah, of course, Alek Manoah being good started at some point because it had to. But that wasn't sort of the core of 2021, even if it was the core of our podcast for, you know, something like four or five weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's been, and you're absolutely right. Like, that has been incredible. And were I more ready to process the fact that the damn season is over, I would be more able to appreciate that. But you know, now that you ask, yeah, I think that was great. Nate Pearson obviously had a lost year again, but he was really interesting at the end of the year. That was two games. But yeah. Still.
You'd have to be having a really bad year to take Nate Pearson as a positive. Yeah. I think to take Nate Pearson's 2021 as a positive, you'd have to be also, in absolute hell.
I feel I should say it's Santiago Espinal, looking like potentially, the BABIP is high, and I think that there's a bit of flukiness in there. But I know they always liked him. He hits the ball hard. I think the defense is good. I wouldn't anoint him the third baseman and like not look for someone better. But yeah. I think that the idea that he is, I would rather play him every day at third base than say Cavan-Biggio. But
dangerous but I, time I, to be saying anything against Cavan-Biggio after his one huge game.
Yeah, I think that was a good revelation for the Jays as well. And also, you know, if we're talking about like the minor leagues, like Gabriel Moreno, and we talked about this last week as well, is a guy who they've loved a long time, but the industry caught up on him because it was just so loud what he did in Double A, and I think that's going to be interesting as well. And yet, none of that's going to replace the value that you're going to lose if you let Simeon and Ray go to free agency.
No, I mean, if you...
Which is what is going to make this a fascinating offseason. I think the Jays next year will be very good. But you just... I mean, you can't spend $30 million in free agency on one-year deals better than that. Like, you literally can't.
No, absolutely not. And I think that if they're going to... Replace might be the wrong... word for that production, but if they're going to find some semblance of that production, it's not going to be that they sign two guys and get similar value from them. It's that they sign two guys that work out pretty well, and then they get, you know, a Moreno to arrive in the major leagues and be a starter, or they get, you know, other guys in the system to surprise. And to be honest, there's not a ton at sort of the upper level of the minors. Like, Moreno is sort of the guy who stands out, who's knocking on the door.
Well, they traded a couple guys for Barrios, yes, which worked out, you know, pretty well. I mean, ideally, it would have led to a playoff berth, but here we are. But yeah, you're right. Like that was the upper minors is not like as good as everybody kind of thinks that the pipeline is, and I don't think they're wrong. You know, it's not like there are solutions next year coming.
No,
like Espinal, I tweeted about this, like Espinal and like Jordan Groshans is like, you know, he was in Double A, he had a decent year, wasn't like as loud as the previous, I don't think that he has established himself as like a very high prospect in the way that like Moreno has. You could maybe do that, but also if you're a win now team, I don't know if that's what you want to do.
No, you don't. Like, straight up, right, you don't want to do that.
You actually don't. Yeah.
You just don't. Like, you want them to prove stuff at AAA. And, but that's, they need some of that, like, the surprise element. And so you can call what Semien and Ray did a surprise. Like, I think that that's fair. Even Semien bouncing back from his, like, MVP-ish level season before, even that, like, you never thought he was going to hit for that kind of power, produce that defensively at second base, all that stuff.
No, yeah.
That surprise has to come from elsewhere, and it's probably going to come from, yeah, those younger players. Those are the players that kind of bust the projection, because it's like, oh, well, we project Nate Pearson for 0.7 WAR because his MLB track record says nothing, and he breaks through and is a decent starter. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, because that's getting harder and harder to believe in, but right, that's the sort of thing that, well, like, that needs to happen.
Manoah probably would have been projected for like minus half a win.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely was not worth minus half a win. Yeah.
Yeah. Pearson's one of those guys. One of the headings I had here in my peek behind the curtain, sometimes I do a rundown where I write things down. You guys might not believe it based on some of the things you hear on the podcast, but you've refused to learn things, and yet I have a heading here that said, what did we learn? Which puts me in a bit of an impasse. But what do you feel like you might have absorbed, maybe if you've rejected the premise of learning it, but it did come in at one point about this team and franchise based on 2021?
I think the big lesson of this year is about the bullpen and about, you know, the Blue Jays, even before Shapiro and Atkins, had done a very good job of cobbling together bullpens and finding guys. I think that's maybe getting harder. I think the Rays, you know, nobody wants to be the Rays. They're grotesque in their labor practices and all that. But like the way that they are able to churn guys and able to like just find robots who are very good. I mean, Kittredge could have done better against the goddamn Yankees in the ninth inning tonight. But be that as it may, I think that's a thing. And I think that like what also like happened, the Rays, again, I don't want to like advocate for what they do, but like they, you know, the Jays had a lot of guys this year who were not optionable, and the Rays were able to churn guys a lot better because the Jays had, you know, Baruchy as an option, Thornton came up and down, Castro, but like for a lot of the season the bullpen was locked in with these dudes who quite often not very good, and I think that that's, you know, I don't know, I mean, I'm sure that the people who work in the industry are much smarter than me and recognize this in a different, you know, earlier and better. But I think that to me is like I'm not saying you need to, it's easier said than done to be like, get a bunch of guys who throw 100.
Let's have 13 good relievers.
Yeah. But also maybe you need to like figure out sooner who is going to go into the reliever, path as opposed to the starter path, and maybe you don't want to have six guys who you can't option in your bullpen. Maybe you want more homegrown guys, and I think that, you know, that's hard. That's hard to get out of that. Like, most teams are not able to do that, but also most teams are not in the American League East, and so I think that that is probably, you know, I would rather not see them throw money at the bullpen. I would not be like mad if they were like, let's get whoever, you know, the best reliever we possibly can. I don't know who even is a free agent, but I think that to me would be, if I was the Blue Jays, was the takeaway from this season. And there's definitely other things. There's definitely, you know, diversifying the lineup, maybe giving a different advice to the manager. But I think ultimately, the way they pissed away the most games was the bullpen.
Yeah, for me, the big learning of the season, and this might be unpopular because I think what I'm about to say, people felt like they already knew. But I don't think it was fair to say that we knew that Bo Bichette, for instance, was who Bo Bichette was this season. Like, he had played 75 MLB games coming to the season. And the skepticism that I personally would have had about Bo Bichette relating to his approach and whether that was scalable over a full season and what he was going to look like, a lot of people didn't have that. Like, what they had seen was enough for them to believe. I didn't feel that way. He's someone you feel confident about. We mentioned Teoscar Hernandez earlier.
It is weird, the whole how he makes it work, but he does.
He does. And now I think now we've seen enough to know that there's definitely flaws in it, but it works. And Teoscar Hernandez, yeah, you're not going to Fangraphs and doing custom dates from when he came back from AAA that time. And you're like, yeah, over the last 112 games, he's the 27th best hitter by WRC+. Okay, now we've seen more. He cut down on the strikeouts this year, actually a little bit less power, but it really worked for him over the long haul. Vladdy, we all believed that he was going to be greater than what we'd seen thus far, because of his pedigree, because of what he'd done in the minor leagues, because he was so young, to be honest, which is, I think, something that people forgot a little bit. But so the learning wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't profound and new. It was about reinforcing what we thought. We thought that these guys could be these guys. And after the season, it's more fair to say that we know that. And that's huge, because I think coming into the season, the Blue Jays had this young, exciting core. But it wasn't for sure that was core is going to be good enough. I think people believed that it was going to be good enough, and it's partly because we've been told that for so long and because of the minor leagues and yada, yada, yada. But I don't think that if we were really honest with ourselves, we knew that this group of players, this lineup, this core was going to be good enough to play with the big boys. And now we know that. And that's incredibly important, because that means that this window isn't a wish casting window. It is a concrete window with this group of players. And so, and like, that's a not an exciting thing to learn, to say, oh, the thing that I already thought, I can think it with more confidence. That's not super exciting, but I think it's so important. It's incredible. Yeah, yeah, it's more important than it is exciting. And I think that's what I'm probably going to take away from the season more than anything, is that, okay, we can lock this in. We can build off this. Like, the proof of concept is not 68% there. It's 100% there. Let's go.
I think that's absolutely correct. And also, you know, it just, this reminds me of Mark Shapiro being like, and I think people were very disappointed when he was talking a couple of years ago about, like, you know, you need like 2 to 5 years worth of MLB experience to really understand what certain players are. And people were like raring to go. It's like, we got Vlad, we got Bo. And like, and a couple of years ago, you didn't know. And as, and you know, 2020 Vlad was not the greatest. And 2021 Kevin Biggio was not the greatest. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right that, like, you feel much more, well, you feel 100% more comfortable with Vlad and Bo and Teoscar as your core going forward. There are definitely still questions all over the place. There's definitely holes all over the place, but you have resources to do that, especially because those guys do not get paid a lot. You know, George Springer ideally plays more than like 79 games or whatever he played this year, next year, and he's real, real good. Also really fun, and that has been a joy, despite the fact that, like,
it was not a joy a lot of the time.
No, yeah, and it was one of many things where it's like, you know, again, you know, the not playing in Toronto could have made a difference. Jordan Springer not, you know, playing more than like 50% of the games could have made a difference. There are so many of those things. But yeah, no, I think that obviously, yeah, you're right, that the there is a lot to look forward to, and there is definitely reason to believe that the core is there, and that is not wish casting, which I think is also a word that you said, which I think is correct.
So what do we think kind of exists on the other side of the coin? Like, what did we not learn this year that we might have learned? The first one that comes to my mind is Pearson, right? Like, we thought this was going to be the year, you know, we kind of penciled him in as the second starter in a lot of places coming into the season.
For real, yeah.
And so we thought, like, okay, this is the year where we kind of, like, maybe he'll have an innings restriction or whatever, but we're going to let him loose and we're going to figure out what this guy is.
We thought Pearson was going to be Manoah, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
Which is crazy that there turned out to be another Pearson.
Hiding in plain sight, 265 pounds.
Even better. Yeah. I like him even more. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if Pearson had done what Manoah did, I think we would have been over the moon with that. Absolutely. And if Pearson ever does what Manoah did this season, I think you got to take that easily. I mean, if what Manoah did this season is the best season of Nate Pearson's career, you have to sign up for that deal. Absolutely. Like, without question, you do. So he's the big one. He's still the ultimate unknown for the Blue Jays. Like, what is Pearson going to be? I'm trying to think, like, who else exists on that list? I mean, on a very...
Biggio, I think.
Biggio is I think he's a great example, because his major league track record coming to this year in 1.5 years was really good. And I know that there the flaws there. And I know that I understand why the internet was ready to turn on him from the beginning, because he was a guy, you know, he was the Gustavo Chacin. He was the guy whose results seemed to outstrip how good he actually was, or his qualities as a baseball player, for lack of a better term. And now we've been given all many, many reasons to question him. Now, we've also, at the very end here, got a reason to believe, just in that one game. I mean, I'm bullish on Biggio being useful. I just don't know, you know, what that role ultimately is.
I just think he should play for the Kansas City Royals, where they can play him every day and it doesn't matter. Like, a win now team doesn't need a platoon of Espinal and Biggio at third base, though they could get away with it, say, if they re-signed Marcus Semien and had him play second base, though that you could that's fine.
Well, I don't like Biggio at third base. Oh, I mean, I don't think he should ever play third base. I don't think he really should play. I've said this before in the podcast. I think he's miscast as a utility player. Everyone's like, he's willing to play any position. It's like, great. Like, a lot of people are willing to do stuff. If you ask them to, like, there's some nice people in the world. I've interacted with Kevin Biggio. He's a very nice man. Of course he's willing to do stuff to help the team. He's like a great guy and he's a good clubhouse guy and I understand all the reasons they like him. I think he's decent at second base. Like, I think he's a decent fielding second baseman and I don't think he's especially a standout really anywhere else he plays on the field. So if you used him as a platoon second baseman who very occasionally played other positions and you had someone else at second from the right side who you felt good about and then you used resources elsewhere, I think you could do that. But the idea that he's sort of one of their big three has obviously the air's come out of that balloon.
Yeah.
But I think the pendulum may have swung a little bit too far the other way in terms of the knives that have come out for Biggio after one, you know, poor injury riddled season.
And it was, it absolutely was. And I know that he's a polarizing guy because there's definitely the people who, you know, look at Baseball Savant and look at StatCast and are like, oh, and there's people who don't and also see the results and you know the results speak louder than the underlying numbers. That's just how that works, and I get it, and I say this like literally every time I write about him. I'm like, I don't want to count him out. I wouldn't bet against him because he was a guy who, like, you know, before he had that breakout season in Double A, people were like, he's not a real prospect, and then he showed that he was, and he got called up, and it's like, I don't know if he's going to be that great in the big leagues, and he's been able to do that, and I don't know if that's like the cachet that his name carries, but like he seems to be a guy who gets the game and is willing to look at ways to improve himself. And I think we saw that a little bit this year. Like he was less selective this year, potentially like to try to, you know, have a do more damage on pitches and shit. And which is also a thing that he has struggled with. I would not write him off, but I think you're absolutely right in being like, you know, just the expectations have to kind of go down, and he would not be a bad person to have on your roster. I don't know that he would be an everyday third baseman. Santiago Espinal intrigues me, but also he's probably in the same category. You know, it would be great to see. You can get away with guys like that at second base or at third base if you have Vlad, Bo, and Simeon, or if you had Vlad, Bo, and someone else really fucking good. But those aren't guys I don't think you build your team around. And it's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be interesting what they do, because also, you know, part of the thing that we've talked about is like diversifying the offense, and I think Biggio does that very well. And I remember Dante Bichette talking about that last September, being like, you know, he gives pitchers a different look, and it's a different thing to have to think about and have to attack. Where that has been a bit of a problem, because it's like not that difficult to attack Teoscar, Vlad, Gurriel, like, you know, you kind of they're not that dissimilar as hitters, but also I think you could also diversify your offense using, you know, say Corey Dickerson, who you traded for, who you got for Joe Panic and also got Adam Simber, which was a ridiculous trade, as I think we talked about last week. So I don't know where that's going to go. But they, you know, they love flexibility, or they did in their sort of like rebuilding phase. I don't know where they are right now, but there should be some, like, you know, win moves that they can make. But also I think that this is, you know, just the nature of the business is like, you know, you can't have everybody who's 31 on your team locked in for 5 years or going to be fucked. So I think they're cognizant of that as well.
Yeah, I think also people think of players in kind of two buckets. They think of everyday players and they think of bench players. And there's plenty of room for players to exist between those two areas. And we see that with the Rays.
The Rays are a very good example.
We see that with the Dodgers, except their players in that bucket are just really fucking good players.
They could be every good players on
but
literally
anything. Rays are a better example. but I think that, you know, Biggio, Espinal, and Dickerson, could all three of them exist in that place for the Blue Jays for future teams?
Maybe if Randall Grichuk's contract didn't exist, yeah.
Yeah, and so
that does make it a little more difficult.
Makes it a little bit more difficult. Maybe that's a world where Gurriel gets traded, which is a possibility we've talked about before as well. But yeah, I think there's room for those players to exist. And Biggio probably is that guy. He's not a 600 plate appearance guy, but he's a 390 plate appearance guy, and he can be useful, and he can, you know, hit ninth and be your quote unquote second leadoff man. And get on base for some of these big bats, and you know there's good stuff that he does. But
no, that's how I would sell the Royals on taking him in trade.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, except if he hits ninth for the Royals, who's driving him in? Well, Sal Perez, home run king.
Absolutely.
But him, Espinal, yeah, they're in that kind of mystery bucket right now of like what are these guys for future? We don't know. Pearson is there. Is Ryu there? Is Ryu there? Because is Ryu a player that we don't really know what we're going to get from him next year? Or are we feeling confident that he is this kind of diminished version of himself already?
Another great question. Obviously I don't know, but I think there will clearly be some diminishment. He's a guy that needs to be managed, and that was the case with the Dodgers, and that's been the case so far. And you know, you need to give him an extra day, and it works better when he has a little bit of an extra day. And he has it's just that's a thing. I love Ryu, especially when he's pitching really well and not being terrible, which, you know, I faced the Orioles today, wasn't his best start. But it definitely is getting to the point where it's like you have to think about him certainly not as your number one. I mean, well, Berríos is here, but also I think Manoah is ahead of him. Ryu as a three, you feel more like he's a four or five at this point.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I wouldn't be shocked if there's a bit of a bounce back next year because sort of the fundamentals of what he does.
Oh, he's great, and I love him, but also...
In theory, you know, velocity didn't really fall off, but it might be one of those situations where he's working harder for that velocity, and therefore he's less able to command it. The changeup wasn't quite the same this year. It is tricky. I think you feel really nice about him as your four.
Absolutely.
You know,
especially if you have, like, Steven Matz as your five, which they probably will not also.
But, you know, we also saw in recent years, too, how quickly that skill set can fall off the cliff with Mark Burley started 2015 as very useful and ended it as totally useless. Marco Estrada, the back injuries were a factor, but he kind of had that command and control changeup skill set, and that became so much worse very quickly. So yeah, if you told me Ryu's going to be actually better next year, he's going to be a sub-4 ERA guy, and he's just going to be a little bit healthier for whatever reason, and it's going to click, I wouldn't be shocked by that. If you told me Ryu's going to be a problem next year and you're going to be concerned about running him out there and you're going to be dreading that fourth year like he's Russell Martin on that contract, that outcome wouldn't shock me either. There's a huge range of what can happen to you. And like you, I'm not going to claim that I know the answer to that, but he's an interesting person to think about for next year because he is one of those guys who moves the needle because he's going to play a fairly significant role, and he could play that role awfully well, and he could play that role in a way that hampers the team significantly.
I mean, I don't, you know, I would bet on Ryu's 2022 at this stage more than I a year ago would have bet on Tanner Roark's 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I would have bet anything against Roark's 2021. There's not a single thing on earth I would have bet more than that Roark was going to suck this year.
Nobody didn't see that coming. Yeah, but
that one was about as obvious as it gets. And
it was as obvious as the stupid Washington Nationals coughing up that fucking game against the goddamn Boston. They were up 5-1.
Not only are the Nationals...
cannot believe it.
Not only are the Nationals terrible...
I absolutely can believe it because they suck. Jesus.
But that's always how they've sucked, too. In recent years, it's always been the bullpen. It's always been the Nationals' problem. So it was very emblematic of their recent history that they did that. I mean, they were more focused on Alex Avila's mini-retirement ceremony than they were getting the win.
Oh, my God.
I was like, are we seriously watching? Like, he was a journeyman. I mean, Avila had a couple okay years, but he didn't, and he wasn't a notable national either. It seemed very odd to me.
His dad is the GM of the Vulcan Tigers. Like, I didn't even know he played for the Nationals. I thought their catcher was Riley Adams.
Yeah, I thought he was retired, to be honest. I already thought he was retired. So that was a bit jarring to really engage. But we engaged with him in a positive way earlier in the game when he got that big hit. And it was like, wow, Avila's the guy who's put it out. So you live and die by Alex Avila, I guess, if you're a Blue Jays fan today.
Well, and this is, again, I think I said at the top, off the top, like, my friends who are not more casual baseball fans, I was just like, don't put your hopes on the Washington Nationals. They're very bad. And I really, really am upset about how right I was about that, but It just the whole day it felt like it was coming. The stupid Rays should have scored some runs on the Yankees, let's be honest. And I tweeted this, but like any other two teams, like if the Mariners and like the fucking, I'm pretending that I don't, you know, the Central doesn't exist, they're terrible, but like any other teams than the Red Sox and the Yankees, are you kidding me? What?
And you know,
what a nightmare. Come on. Like the two fan bases that deserve the most misery getting joy. Fuck off.
And you know that there's some execs and there's some people in baseball who are just like, oh, this is the best, blah, blah, blah. You know, Robert Manfred.
The ratings are going through the roof.
Yeah, for the one game. God, who cares? Yeah. yeah, like, wow, you really made a lot of money off that one game that you've already sold to your advertisers. Like,
eat at Arby's.
Like, you really just want, like, they want to do a press release of, like, oh, this wild card is our most watched since 2014. But that's what he lives. That's what Robert Manfred lives for. And
he does.
You know, in many ways, it'd be nice to be Robert Manfred. Power is cool. Money is nice. But living and dying by wildcard ratings is something I don't envy him. That's what he has to do with his life. So I feel like that.
It's. I mean, I like the baseball playoffs, but it's gonna take me a couple weeks before I can watch a baseball game again.
Focus on the National League. I really wanted...
Go Brewers. Go Brewers.
I really wanted to end it on that sound, because that was a great sound to end the Toronto Blue Jays season. I think you should get a clip of that sound, and you should just loop it, because that's where the Blue Jays are
That's what the season was.
That's what the season was. And guys,
God damn it.
Listeners, we thank you for sticking with us through the Manoah times. The sad times, the exciting times. It has been a heck of a ride. We appreciate all of you guys who listened and hope you got some entertainment and maybe tonight got some catharsis out of this discussion. And we will talk.
And then next week we're going to talk about the CBA.
Woo! We will talk to you again soon. Have a good one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.